You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Civic Media Spotlight. To kick us off, we have the Todd Alba Show. And Todd welcomes back Amy Berrio from Clean Wisconsin to talk about the growing number of data centers in Wisconsin to power AI and what that means for our environment.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Glad to have you along. 35 now past the hour of 2 o'clock on this September 4th, 2025. Well, I always like it when people come and sit at the desk with us and are here in person. Nothing wrong with StreamYard, but we always have better conversations, I feel like, when we have somebody here with us. And that is the case. We welcome her back to the program, Amy Berrio from Clean Wisconsin. Amy, how the heck are you?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. I got my vaccines last week, and so it knocked me out for a couple of days, but okay. Actually feeling great today and really happy you're here. Before the break, before the farm news break with Pam Yonke and the Midwest Farm Report, we played, I know you've seen it, this really good clip on Instagram by Charlie Behrens. Mm-hmm. And if people haven't seen it, you can go to Instagram, look up Manitowoc Minute or Charlie Behrens and find it. I don't know, Zomers, can we link an Instagram link in our show notes somehow?
Yes, it'll be in there.
Look how great he is. Aaron Zomers, best producer in the business, as they say. So we'll have it on there. So our show notes, so you can look it up and watch it on there. If you're just joining us, Amy, correct me at any point if I'm getting this wrong.
Okay.
Essentially what Charlie said is, hey, we have these things called data centers, however you want to say it. And a lot of them are in Silicon Valley. And now we got Yahoo's coming out here to Wisconsin saying, because these things take so much water, hey, guess what Wisconsin has? Lots of water because we're sitting next to the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. And so these data, there's already, I didn't realize this, at least 30, right? Either it running or under consideration.
Well, there's a slight difference between just plain old data centers.
Uh-huh. And then, let's start there.
And then these AI data centers.
Let's start there.
So we've had regular old data centers for a while in the Midwest. And they power our things that we do. Our
phones.
Yeah, all computers. All those emails you don't delete, where are they stored? They're stored in a data center somewhere. Every time you stream a Netflix show, where's that coming from? Well, a data center is helping bring you that.
Let's if I can pause you right there, because I think this is really, really important what you just said. Mm-hmm. Because I think through narrative, that everybody wants, it lives in the cloud. Everything's in the cloud.
Yeah, it's nowhere.
And somebody thinks that, I mean, I think in my head, you think, oh, this is just like up in space or over the air. No. The cloud is actually a physical thing on the ground, correct?
Yeah. So there is a building somewhere that houses all that data that we are accessing all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's been going on for quite some time. But suddenly it feels, here comes AI. So this is an incredibly intensive way to get information. It takes a lot of data centers, a lot of energy to power. I think we all kind of know we're in this sort of pivotal moment in human history where we have to get a handle on climate change, to get a handle on the way we produce energy, start moving to clean energy, start using less energy. We need to figure those things out really fast here in the next couple of generations. But what we have coming into this moment is an energy user like we have never seen before. And so when you talk about that Charlie Behrens clip, I think, you know, that is about that Port Washington data center development. And I think a lot of people, when they realized the scale of this data center, were shocked. This is going to be one of the largest data centers in the country, if not the world.
Wow.
It's going to use more energy easily than 4 million homes. It will be like the biggest city Wisconsin has ever seen with no people living there.
Let's say that again, make sure people get it. That this will be like 4 million homes?
Right, worth of energy.
That's the amount of energy this thing is going to suck out of the resources of the state of Wisconsin.
Right. More than 4 million homes. And so I think suddenly that made people sort of pay attention to, like, wait a minute, what's going on? Because, yes, Wisconsin, we are at the center of, you know, the largest freshwater resources in the world, our Great Lakes, incredibly valuable. We also have a lot of land, a lot of agricultural land. Mm-hmm. You know, this data center in Port Washington is almost 2,000 acres, mainly farmland, that's going to be, you know, converted into a campus of buildings that hold computer servers, you know, software servers. And so data servers. That is, that's an eye-opening transition to go from, you know, what feels like overnight, a total change in what's happening in Wisconsin. And I think people are starting to pay attention.
You mentioned, and by the way, we're talking with Amy Berriel from Clean Wisconsin on this issue that I don't think has gotten enough information and coverage. Or I know some people pointed out that maybe it's not the coverage is lacking. It's just there's so much news out there. And this is not exactly a sexy topic to talk about. Oh, data centers, that sounds boring. You know, but until, and I think I credit Charlie Behrens a lot for, as we say, putting it down there where the chickens could get at it and say, hey, you like go walleye fishing? This ain't good. You know? I mean, that's a simplistic way to say it, but it's also very, very true, is it not, Amy?
Well, I mean, I think you'd have the data center developers saying, hey, you know, don't worry about the amount of water that this is going to use. I know for that Port Washington site, the developer is saying, well, we're going to use like a recycled closed loop water system. And it's going to be, you know, less water. The same thing you're seeing at Microsoft. Same thing they're saying. Data center developed, being developed potentially in Dane County, has not gone through the approvals yet. So you're seeing, I think, data center developers understand that people are going to start worrying about water, so they're trying to kind of tamp down on those concerns.
Narrative.
Yeah. But what we don't have really is a lot of transparency, like exactly how much water are you going to use? What about on the hottest days of the year when our water resources are already stressed? You know, we got farms using water for irrigation. We have households using water. Now we have a data center wanting to use water. How much is it going to be? And what we're not seeing is a lot of transparency. The data center that's been proposed in Dane County, we don't know exactly how much water it's going to use every day. We don't know exactly how much energy it's going to use. We don't know who the final owner of this site is going to be. And so what we're discovering is oftentimes these data centers are coming to town and already have deals with the energy utilities who are actively courting them to come. And by the time anybody learns about it, the deals are already done with very little transparency or opportunity for the public.
Let's go back to Port Washington because, and I want to make clear, I'm trusting Charlie Behrens and other people like you and reporters have covered this. So I'm going to go with that there was an open hearing, a meeting, give Port Washington credit for that. And I don't know what the exact breakdown was, but overwhelmingly it appears that the citizens of Port Washington that came out said, no, we do not want this. And yet the Port Washington Common Council voted to go ahead with it. I think it's worth noting, Amy, is it not, that this is what makes us so dangerous right now, in my opinion. Republicans in the legislature have underfunded local municipalities, and that has been pawned off as, oh, we gave you an increase. It really didn't cover what local municipalities needed to exist. So they're left with, do I raise taxes on my constituents in my county or my city or my village? Oh, hey, here's this great data center that has a great big multi-million dollar check that will take care of my budget deficits locally. All I have to do is say yes, and they're going to create data. Is that unfair?
Well, I mean, you raise very good points. Like, you know, this Vantage, which is going to be the owner of this data center, is going to pay upfront $175 million. And that money is going to go to, I imagine, badly needed infrastructure. Also, it'll go into, you know, getting its own water tower, getting its own sewer and water hookups, getting power lines run out there, getting all the infrastructure that it needs. And these data centers are going to be paying more taxes than it would be if it was agricultural land.
Right.
And so
exactly.
I think
exactly. Bingo.
I think communities are seeing those dollar signs and they've been sort of trained to see the dollar signs. Right. That's kind of how we've been functioning for a long, long time. It's hard to find, folks who are really enthusiastic about having a data center come to town, though, when you look past those incentives.
And you bring up a great point. Landowners, harder and harder, as we know from Pam Yonke and others, for our farming community, our ag producers to make a living. And now with a labor shortage due to things going on out in Washington, and someone comes along and says, I'll give you five times what your land is worth. Your worries are over. And these data center people are, this is eerily reminiscent of the whole Foxconn crap that happened under Scott Walker, in my opinion. Let's go to the phone lines real quickly. 855-752-4842. Ollie in the Northwoods. Ollie, what say you?
Well, I am glad that you're having this conversation. I've been worried about this for several weeks now, since I started hearing a little bit more on the radio about data centers coming to Wisconsin. And that's a scary thought, and I hope people are doing their due diligence in as far as looking things up and paying attention, because the groundwater has been destroyed. I've seen several different blogs and articles about it, and the groundwater is bad. Mm-hmm. Their electricity bills have skyrocketed. For the homeowners in the areas around those data centers.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thought and something that all Wisconsinites should be aware of, that utility bills will go up, water quality goes down. Some of the people that live in around those areas where the data centers are and are being built, they have 24/7 lights on.
Right. That's the other thing to think about. Yeah.
In their house all the time.
Ollie, thank you very much for the call. Really, really appreciate it. We're talking with Amy Berrio here of Clean Wisconsin. Amy, comments on Ollie's comments.
Well, I want to talk about some of the, I think, environmental impacts that people are concerned about with data centers. And, you know, it's important when we talk about energy use, especially, to understand that these are enormous energy users, but also that they're being, as I mentioned, actively courted by our energy utilities in the state. So that Port Washington Data Center was initially envisioned as a smaller project. And then according to the developer, after meeting with the We Energies executives, they made the decision to use three times more energy at that site than had originally been planned. Alion Energy worked with a data center developer in Iowa and then actively courted them to come to Dane County and set up shop in Vienna. So that is currently a proposed data center. So our energy utilities make a guaranteed rate of return profit every time they build a new power generation facility. And what we're looking at here, as we've seen with the Microsoft data center in Mount Pleasant, is that these energy utilities want to build new gas plants primarily to power these data centers. Well, we all know that that's burning fossil fuel, that's adding to air pollution. And what we want to see at Clean Wisconsin is a plan from some of these developers and some of these utilities for clean energy, for using less water, for transparency about what the impacts are going to be. Because I'm going to tell you, these data centers also have diesel-burning generators on site, backup generators, and they have to test those periodically. Yeah. On the Microsoft side, it's hundreds of diesel generators on site. That's real air pollution for the people who live nearby.
You bring up the topic, and I'm glad you did. We'll come back here and get your answer to this. But you bring up the topic of energy companies involved here. Mm-hmm. Does any of this run through the Public Service Commission in the state of Wisconsin?
Not this. So
really?
Basically, to some extent, but not the approvals of the
We'll centers. Come back and talk with Amy Berrio, get your the full answer on why isn't the PSC having something to do with this and more. Data centers in Wisconsin. Not exactly great neighbors. More after this on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we have Valley Focus. On this week of Valley Focus, Northeast Bureau Chief Lisa Hale talked with Michelle Schultz of the Oshkosh Farmers Market on their September activities. And some are saying it's peak market season.
I'm Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale, and today we're talking the Oshkosh Farmers Market Woo-hoo! With Michelle Schultz. How are you today?
Fabulous. How are you doing, Lisa?
I am doing very, very well. And, you know, it's starting to get fall-like, and I'm feeling cooler weather coming in, and the kids are going...
Are you feeling all pumpkin spicy? Is that what you're telling
that
me?
That is what I am telling you. Pumpkin spice, I am that basic girl. But, you know, with school going back in and the end of summer, so to speak, people might not realize there's still a lot to do with the Oshkosh Farmers Market.
Oh my goodness. We're going to go through until October 25th. And now coming up in September, we have markets every Saturday in September. And this is the bountiful time of the year. This is the time when everything's in season. Apples and the root vegetables start coming in. Sweet corn. You're going to start to see the squashes. And we still have a ton of summer vegetables in. So if you're looking to stock your refrigerator with things from the Oshkosh Farmers Market, September is clearly peak season for it.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you go in the spring at the beginning of the market, you get the greens and the lettuces and some of the spring onions.
Yep, strawberries. Yep. You're happy to get those first fresh things out of the garden.
But
and then
now,
summer comes and, you know, peaches are in now. And then you start seeing more kohlrabis and beets start coming in. But right now, everything's in season and it's just gorgeous at the market.
I know, just seeing all those colors and the tomatoes. Whenever I see tomatoes stacked,
all I think about is eating the rainbow every time I walk the farmer's market.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as you said, now is the time. Honestly,
yes.
It really is. So do you guys have any special events coming up
in
September? We
do. Coming up on September 6th, we are continuing with our fundraising efforts for the Oshkosh Farmers Market. And we've had our vendors donate a bunch of cool stuff. So whether it's gift certificates or soaps and bath bombs and jewelry, we'll be raffling those off at the farmers market on September 6th. So it's your chance to win fabulous prizes from the vendors. On September 13th, we're welcoming Art at the Market, where we feature all the fantastic artists and art shops and businesses that we have downtown. Anybody who wants to come paint, draw, sculpt, caricature, you'll see them at the farmers market on September 13th. And then on September 27th, we are partnering again with the YMCA Day for our YMCA Day at the Oshkosh Farmers Market. The Y comes in and they have several booths open with a whole bunch of fun activities and information about the farmers market. They typically rent the square and they have demonstration exercise and yoga classes in the square all morning. So it's just a great day to experience the Oshkosh Farmers Market and the YMCA.
Wow. So there, you guys do not slow down.
We do not slow down. No.
It does not get slow. In fact, I think it ramps up.
Yeah, we try to slow down, but it just keeps ramping up. So if somebody comes to me with a great idea, we try to find a way to make it work at the market.
Absolutely. And I don't want to get too far into October because you'll be back again to talk about October.
Well, if you'll have me, I'll be back to talk about October.
I definitely will have you. But let's talk a little bit about the importance of the farmers market, not only for those of us who shop it, but for the actual vendors, the farmers.
The Oshkosh Farmers Market supports not just only farmers, but small businesses. Everyone who vends at the market has a purpose. So whether it's that farmer keeping that family farm alive, whether it's that mom or dad or grandparent trying to raise a little extra money to make ends meet or to pay for college or to pay for a summer camp or buy kids' school clothes, we have the young entrepreneurs who are selling bracelets and paintings and things, saving up for their first car. I think the uniquest thing that most people don't realize when you walk down that street, each one of those vendors is there has a purpose. I mean, they enjoy what they do, but as you walk down the street, there's so many stories.
There really are.
There are so many stories.
For every one of the vendors, whether it's, as you said, a farmer or a food truck or a food booth, I mean, the stories that you hear from everybody mm-hmm. at the farmers market.
Everyone has a purpose. Everyone has a dream. And that's what's cool about it. That's what's really cool about it.
Absolutely. So what are you going to be doing at the farmers market in September? I mean, what are you looking forward to the most?
I would have to say I'm ready for those full season squashes. I like to make homemade squash soup in the fall, and I have a killer recipe that involves a little white wine and some cream, and it always tastes the best with fresh squash out of the garden.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fall is the time of year that I look forward to the most because of squashes, pumpkin. As we said, I'm a pumpkin spice girl.
And I've already bought my first set of apples because I love fresh apples from the farmer's market. I bought Zestars this week. And so as soon as those are gone, then we'll go on to the next one. That's our favorite. But we also have the Saturn peaches at the farmer's market. And this year, the crop wasn't very big. They literally sold out last weekend.
Oh, wow.
But I managed to score 2 packs.
That's always fun.
That's
always
what's fun about being the manager. You get there first.
So the Oshkosh Farmers Market is every Saturday.
Every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 12:30 p.m.
And sometimes they open a little bit earlier. Some of the vendors
do. We do permit, during the pandemic, we started a policy where people who weren't comfortable shopping with large crowds or had difficulties maneuvering the farmers market, we permit shopping starting at 7:30. And that is something we have continued because it's been popular with those people who have challenges with crowds or with physical or emotional disabilities.
And you can go to any of the businesses usually. They usually open up early.
Downtown opens up along with the farmers market. Most of the businesses open up between 8 and 9 a.m. So you can shop early at the downtown businesses while the farmers market's in session.
And you mentioned that it's crowded, a little bit crowded. I mean, sometimes there's a lot of crowds, but just the getting out there and being a part of the Oshkosh farmers market is the most important thing.
Yeah, you get to see your friends and your neighbors, people you haven't seen from high school. It's just a morning where community comes together and celebrates agriculture. It's just, there's just something there for everyone.
Michelle, thank you very much for joining me today.
It's great to be here, Lisa. It's nice to see you.
We move on to the John and Gordy Show right here on the Civic Media Spotlight. Paul Fanlon, Cap Times editor and publisher, came on to the John and Gordy Show to talk about Idea Fest. They explained who is all going to be there, what time, what each public speaker will talk about. And Paul is especially excited about the New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd, who will speak with author David Marinus, formerly of the Washington Post, about the state of Washington under the Donald Trump administration.
It's John Gorney, WMDX 92.7.
7:35, sunshine this morning. It's beautiful out there, but a little bit on the chilly side, starting out in the mid-40s, getting into the low to mid-60s later on today. Idea Fest is happening. Starts Monday, goes through Saturday, and Cap Times publisher Paul Fanlon joins us this morning to tell us more about this. And there is a website you can go to find out a lot of information, CapTimesIdeaFest.com. Good morning, Paul. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, guys. Big fan of you guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah. You know, every year you get better and better guests. I mean, this year you have outdone yourself, and we're going to talk about a lot of the guests that you have at Idea Fest this time around.
Yeah, got a couple of governors and some very well-known columnists. So let's start out with what's happening on Monday with Idea Fest. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we start out Monday with John Nichols, our associate editor. We'll be with Kate Shaw, who's a wonderful big thinker, law professor, someone who's clerked for a Supreme Court justice and is a big figure in Washington. She also happens to be married to Chris Hayes, the MSNBC nightly host,
right.
Who John works with. That'll be fun. You know, we've tried to, over time, bring in some younger speakers, people who kind of represent not my baby boom generation of political thinkers, and Kate's one of those. So she's at 6 Monday night, followed by the great Maureen Dowd, the Pulitzer Prize winning mm-hmm. Columnist for the New York Times, She publishes in the Times on Sundays, and she's often, you know, sometimes controversial, but always interesting. And she'll be in conversation with her longtime friend, David Marinus, who, of course, is doing seven different moderations for us next week. That's the first. So that'll be a great conversation. You know, a quick anecdote. David met Maureen. David was working for the Washington Post. Maureen was working for the Washington Star, which has not existed for a long time, covering the Maryland suburbs in the late 1970s. And I was there. I'd gotten out of graduate school, and I was working for a newspaper called the Montgomery County Sentinel, Montgomery County, Maryland, where Bob Woodward had worked before I got there. And so I was in this press room that had all these, who knew, all these future superstars. Anyway, it'll be great to see her, and I think that'll be a good discussion.
It probably is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so let's move on to a few other things. We talked about Monday, and let's move through the week here. Tuesday.
Well, Tuesday, there are other sessions. We have virtual sessions. We have sponsored sessions. But I think for your audience, I'm going to point to the big ones in Shannon Hall at Memorial Union. Tuesday night, we have a first session with a couple of great Washington minds. Jennifer Rubin was a longtime columnist for The Washington Post.
Yes.
She resigned amid all the controversy around Jeff Bezos' relationship. And Norm Eisen is a longtime Washington lawyer. He's been in the news recently representing the person who's trying to be fired from the CDC. So it's timely. They created an online publication called The Contrarians.
Yes.
And that's been existed for about a year. And so their first Tuesday night. And then we're delighted to have Stacey Abrams from Georgia.
Yes.
On our stage. She was born in Madison. Obviously, your audience knows she's a huge voting rights activist and a major courageous figure in American politics.
She's great. I'm amazed that more people aren't talking about her.
Yeah.
Maybe they will be in the coming year or two.
Yeah, I think, before the midterms here. Definitely. And I'm a big fan of Jennifer Rubin, who, by the way, was very, very conservative. Her column was very conservative until Trump came around.
Yeah.
And suddenly I'm thinking, wow, listen to her. I mean, she's really out there, you know?
She's
great.
She definitely is.
Yeah.
So that, you know, the interesting thing about Stacey Abrams is she also writes a lot of books that are fiction.
Oh, I didn't
so
know
she's
that.
She's a kind of a Renaissance woman, and going to be fun to have her.
Yeah.
Now on Wednesday, I know that Civic Media is involved on Wednesday and Friday. We've got some live broadcasts, I think, in the mix there for Wednesday and Friday. So let's move on to Wednesday.
Yeah, let's find out what's going on.
Well, Wednesday has a session with another young, brilliant journalist historian named Garrett Graff, who Marinus, who is moderating this session, thinks could be one of the most interesting because of he's one of the important thinkers. He does a newsletter called Doomsday Scenarios, which is around the topic of whether things are really as bad as they appear. And he's also an author, has a new book on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He'll be on first, and Marinus thinks that's kind of a hidden gem that people won't recognize that name immediately. And David said he's really looking forward to that. After that, we have David with Tony Evers. I'm really looking forward to that. David surprised me by saying he had never met Tony. David is, of course, this icon in local affairs. And so I'm really looking forward to that conversation, kind of how the governor got to his decision not to seek a third term, the experience of being a bulwark for 8 years against a gerrymandered Republican legislature.
Absolutely.
So that should be a fun discussion.
Yeah, you should warn Marinus in case, you know, Evers slips in a few profanities. You know, he oftentimes surprises a lot of people.
Yeah.
such an unassuming person. You know? I just love that.
All right.
He's great.
He is great.
Okay, let's go to Thursday.
Well, Thursday is kind of off the board at this point. It's our celebration of journalism over at the Edgewater, and it's a sellout at this point. It's Marinus and Gene Robinson of the late of the Washington Post. Now, you can review it on YouTube after, but the tickets are sold out for that. So we probably want to move on to Friday. Friday has another brilliant younger journalist, Evan Osnos, who's works for The New Yorker. He's lived in China, covered, written books, just a brilliant guy. He's going to be on stage first with David. I just have to say, as an aside, one of my favorite national podcasts is the political scene by The New Yorker. And it has Evan and it has Jane Mayer, who was here a couple of years ago. And the third person is Susan Glasser, who was here last year with her husband, Peter Baker, The New York Times. So we're getting to get them together, but we've gotten all three of them on stage. Yeah. And that'll be, and Evan wrote a book that came out this summer that's cleverly titled The Haves and Have Yachts. the discussion with Evan Osnos about about what's happening with the plutocracy in America. And then second Friday night will be John Nichols with Tim Walz. And that will be, that'll be fun and colorful, I'm sure. Governor Walz has been continuing to be out there. I haven't seen this week. He's two-term governor of Minnesota, and if I missed it, he's making a decision about whether to seek a third term. But I think he'll be entertaining and engaging on our stage Friday night.
And I think we'll probably be broadcasting that. That's a possibility.
That, I believe that. Yeah, that's on the Civic Media Radio
Network. So
you'll
be able to hear that.
Yep.
Yeah, Tim Walz.
Yeah. Okay. And then things wrap up on Saturday.
Yeah, we have four sessions on Saturday. I love them all. The first one is County Executive Melissa Agard and Mayor Sacha Rhodes Conway with Nichols talking about the challenge of leading in our progressive region with the kind of disdain that this White House has for cities like Madison, counties like Dane, Medicaid, other programs, ICE, the whole nine yards. So that'll be our first session, kicks off at 2:30 on Saturday. The second one is also a lot of fun. Ben Wickler, former chair of Democratic Party, is writing a book on how the lessons learned in sort of taking back Wisconsin might apply nationally. And David Marinus, who's written, I don't know, 15 books, is moderating that. And both of them, it's kind of fun. I was doing preparing the introduction. They both went to Madison West and now are big national.
Wow.
2 years apart.
Yeah.
You know, three, four decades apart. That's second. third, on the first session on Saturday night is really terrific. Columbia University journalism professor emeritus Sam Friedman was here last year and did a wonderful job talking about the history of progressivism in the Midwest on a panel. And he wanted to come back, and I'm just delighted he wanted to come back. And he's brought in two huge national experts on Christian nationalism, the rise of Christian nationalism. Mm-hmm. And he shared with me some of the background about how we got here. And I think that will be one of the most intellectually provocative sessions of the whole week. I really think people will enjoy that. And then we finish it off with J.B. Pritzker of Illinois, one-on-one with J.B. Pritzker, who, shall we say, is in the news these days and kind of brings the, is a pretty outspoken, interesting guy. I might mention that both Stacey Abrams and J.B. Pritzker will be interviewed by Karen Tumulty of the Washington Post, who's has family connections in the area, but she's wonderful. She was on the Post opinion section for many, many years, and your audience probably knows what happened to the Post opinion section with intervening endorsement and so on and so forth. So now she's replaced Dan Balls, who's also an Idea Fest veteran, as their top national political correspondent. So that's going to be fun to have her do those two interviews.
Yeah.
Paul, we have a couple of minutes left here. How long has Idea Fest been going on? How many years?
We started it in 2017. Mm-hmm. So it's the ninth year. It's evolved over time. In the early years, we tended to have even more in-person, smaller sessions so that there'd be more of a smorgasbord to choose among, so there'd be three simultaneous sessions. That model kind of changed through the pandemic when we were all virtual. In the last 2 or 3 years, it's become a lot easier for me to recruit speakers like this because we've gotten something of a national reputation.
Yes.
So last year was the year of the incredible woman. We had Nancy Pelosi, Liz Cheney, Heather Cox, Richardson, Doris Kearns Goodwin, Judy Collins.
Yeah.
This year, I think we're just as strong. But I just like to make the point that supporting IDFS and attending is a lot of fun. It's not all just serious talk. It's, you know, in the Memorial Union, obviously the terrace is right there. A lot of friendly people, a lot of interactions. And I would just encourage people to go to our website, and you can also come that day.
Very good.
That evening, and it's be a $25 ticket for
very good. Paul, thank you so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Yeah.
Good luck with this year's IDFS. Happy that Civic Media is also involved with it this year.
Sounds great.
People want to find out more, they can go to your website, CapTimesIDFS.com. Thank you, Paul. Coming back right after this.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
To finish off the Civic Media Spotlight, we have the WXCO Morning Report. Chad speaks with Ben Heindel, father of Wausau child who has been fighting leukemia but is now in remission and has started a new foundation to help others also fight childhood cancer.
And good morning and welcome to the WXCO Morning Report, part of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow here on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. I am Chad Holmes along with Ian Welsh. Ian, again, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
Already Wednesday. Hard to believe, huh?
Yeah, it's just flying right by.
Four-day week.
That's true.
We will have more with you coming up in just a little bit, but to start things off, we're very happy to welcome back across the table Ben Heindel to talk about, I think this time around, a lot of, I think we'll use the term sunshine in your life, your family's life, and Emmett's life. But Ben, good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you, Chad. Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk about a couple of, one event coming up this weekend, and also a little bit of about your organization. But I wanted to talk about where you and your family and Emmett stand, because it's been a journey that's lasted, number one, how long?
2.5 years from start to finish.
And you knew from the beginning that it was going to be a long journey when the diagnosis came, correct?
Yeah. So in April of 2023, Emmett was diagnosed with leukemia, a leukemia type that chemo is really responsive to. So we knew his outlook was going to be generally pretty good. But to get there was a 2.5 year process from the get-go.
When you sit here now, what do you know now that you didn't know 2.5 years ago? Because you were told probably a lot of information. You probably researched a lot of information. You're looking for everything. What have you learned, maybe even beyond the medical aspects, about maybe humanity, about your and your family's ability to handle incredible stress and incredible mountains to climb? Yeah. What have you found out in the last 2.5 years?
Yeah, my wife and I talk often about it, but there's a word, and I don't know the word to describe it, but whatever is in the middle of the spectrum, one end is the most terrible thing that we've ever experienced in our life, earth-shattering from a diagnosis perspective. But then on the other end is the best, most happy place we've ever been in possible. Life could not go or be any better for us. Wherever that middle point is where we often land, because to get to where we're at today comes with incredible struggle and progress and really the lowest of the low that life has to offer. But now we are thriving on the high end of that spectrum too.
Where is Emmett right now in that process?
Yeah, so,
right now at this point in early September of 2025.
So as of today, or rather, I'll back up just slightly. June 30th, he completed his 2.5 year chemo treatment. So that leaves him in remission. And then what will happen is he goes often back for checkups and whatnot. But July 11th, he officially rang the bell, signifying the end of his treatment. And then today, it's just really living life like a normal almost four-year-old. The only exception to that is he's got some sort of leftover medications that he has to take and some ancillary things. But beyond that, if you just were to look at him, he's a perfect three-year-old boy.
Could I ask, and because something popped into my mind, and I don't know whether or not there's a perfect answer to it, but when a very, very young child goes through something like this, is there any idea how it does ultimately affect the whole process? Because we all go through the process of growing up and then becoming young adults and adults. Any idea how going through such a physically draining experience, and I imagine even as a child it has to be even beyond that, how that affects long term? Is there have you had any discussions on that, or is it something that we don't know? I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. The only answer to that is in the form of a bunch of maybes. So it's he's too young to tell long-term effect right now, but there are young adult cancer groups that will bring forward, you know, topics of concern where, you know, it's a physical, you know, limitation maybe at some point in life, but that's usually followed with a bunch of maybes. We don't really know at this point. So with everything that the last 2.5 years has brought us, we really are just living for today. And unfortunately, in the medical world, they take care of the biggest problem first, which is fair. But some of that comes with ancillary side effects. Right. And some of that, you just have to sort of take the biggest elephant in the room and worry about side effects and long-term care after the fact. Mm-hmm. So we're just at that point right now, and we're just taking each day for what it is.
You were saying before we went on the air, he is getting these milestones that any youngster goes through.
Yeah.
And what does those feelings like? Because you've had the feelings of other milestones, but they usually have involved cancer treatment.
Yeah.
These are different kind of milestones, right?
Yeah. The milestones that we've encountered so far in his life have been bound by the four walls of a hospital room. These small milestones. So if you think of childhood development, the act of jumping, right, simply getting the 2 feet off the ground at the same time is something he was not able to do for the longest time. And that was attributed to the chemotherapy sort of knocking it out of him. Mm-hmm. And we've seen him jump around now like a kangaroo. And it's the most freeing feeling in the world, that other side, that really positive side of that spectrum, that just it warms your heart every time you see it.
I can only imagine, again, I don't think we can kind of remember being that young.
Right.
But can you imagine what it's like to have maybe, it almost be like having weights taken off your shoulders, I imagine, for that young man, that young boy, that young child.
Yes.
To finally have those weights taken off, and he's going to want to jump right through the ceiling, isn't he?
Yeah, and we have to sometimes tamper his expectations of, he wants to move so fast and do things so quick that we have to literally tell him to slow down just because he will sort of get over his skis at some point in time. But that also comes with learning and figuring out life now. So
we will have more with Ben Heindel, talk a bit about an organization that he and his family have formed to help others who are going through such an incredibly difficult time with illness and cancer within your family, and especially for young kids, named for Emmett. And we'll also talk about a blood drive coming here in Wausau this weekend. So more to come, plenty more to come with Ben Heindel. Really an incredible story with his son Emmett and the entire family. And coming up next, it's a top of the hour update. We'll find out what's going on with news, weather, and sports. And then we'll be back with more with Ben Heindel coming up at 7:22 this morning. It is the WXCO Morning Report, part of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow here on 98.9 WXCO.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.